Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from New Zealand, the fabulously fluoridated fun park where corporate interests come to play and sign their trade deals and engage in money laundering, incidentally done at the same location, Sky City Casino. Yeah. So, my very special guest joining me today is Kim Ekman, but before I go to her, I just wanted to remind people that this is a listener-supported show. It's a listener-supported YouTube channel as well. There's a listener-supported network and everything. The reason why I do this, have been doing it for nearly 10 years, without anybody actually telling me to do it or giving me, you know, a force or cause to do it, is because it's the right thing to do. The right thing to do for the listeners, okay, is to, you know, help support the platforms that they listen to, okay? Tell them that you want to hear more. Give them something so that that actually helps with that. Share the broadcasts around. If people don't know where to find the archives and you even had trouble yourself, but now you found them, tell your friends about it and stuff like that. Hey, have you ever figured out how to find the Vinnie Eastwood archives? I couldn't for the life of me figure it out. The website's too complicated. Just share it around, right? There's a multitude of ways to help. And of course, one of the most useful ones, I mean, just for us, you know, we've got to eat, got to pay rent and pay power bills just like the rest of you. So, and we got no other income. Like, ultimately, that's it. We're a leaf on the wind, completely subject to the breeze of your donations. All right? You have any idea what a great feeling it is to know that you are going to get exactly what you need whenever you need it and the exact amount that you need? That's not a feeling that many people in the truth movement have, okay? It's not a feeling I often have, because that would imply that you're wealthy, okay? Some people accuse people of going into the truth movement for the money. And I can guarantee you now that if you're trying to go into the truth movement for the money, you must be one of the most idiotic people alive, because there's not as much money in truth. And there certainly isn't enough of it to go round, okay? It's a stranglehold, because the people who know the truth are those who are usually the victims of the greatest and biggest lies of our time, particularly related to banking and all that monetary business. However, if you want that system to change, really change, try giving a couple of bucks a month to me, okay? You think I'm not affecting change by doing this radio show? I've received emails from people who've not committed suicide because they started listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide, started having a laugh about all these terrible things that got them down at night. This is saving lives, this broadcast. This is helping activists who would otherwise be unknown or not heard from directly. A platform to speak from. Okay, this is the important work that compels me personally to help all of these people all around the world who need a place to have their voice aired, right? I need your support and your help so that I can simply continue to do it, right? If you are compelled to give me $5 a month, thank you. If you're compelled to give me 10, thank you. You're compelled to give me 20. Thank you. I'll give you the same thanks, and you'll get nothing back for your money other than the things that you have already seen, you've already heard on this broadcast, and all the things that are yet to come that will be given to free, for free, to everyone. That is what you are paying for. That is what you are donating for. This is not about possession. This is not about hierarchy. This is not about the accumulation of wealth. This is about putting energy in a monetary form into something that you believe in. Believe in enough to invest in without getting anything back from it directly, knowing that it does some good for this world. That's why I want you to donate for me. And if you're having trouble feeding yourself, or your kids, putting a roof over your head, don't donate to me. Please don't. Don't let an effort to, you know, make the world a better place put you in greater destitution. Don't do that to yourself. I wouldn't want it, and you shouldn't want it either. Now I've got that off my chest, I feel a hell of a lot better. It's been bugging me, that thought, buzzing around in my head, like a mosquito that somehow slipped through the mosquito curtain, and for some reason is impossible to locate or to kill. My very special guest, however, is Kim Ekman, coming at us from 4 o'clock in the effing morning, I believe. Kim, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Was it actually 4 o'clock in the morning or was it 5?
No, it is 4:07 at the moment.
Okay.
So early.
Yeah. Okay, well, for those who don't know you, and this includes myself, by the way, would you please tell us a little bit about who you are and what it is you do?
Well, I guess I'm on your show because I've done this book project, including some amazing researchers and truth searchers, like you call them. An idea came into my mind in May last year because I have this question in my mind, so what can I do? And I think a lot of people do. So I'm not a researcher. I'm not working day and night like you guys and the other people in the book for the better of the world and so on. But I come from a normal background in Sweden, working class family, and I still got friends up in Sweden that, you know, are believing the news and are quite filled with fear and so on. So this book came as an idea. It's like that mosquito in the head that you were talking about earlier, that it doesn't shut down, you know, you need to do it basically. So I interviewed these 8 people, asked them 14 questions, the same questions to all of them, about the world today. And it's spreading really good, which is fantastic, because I think it's an easy way to maybe, you know, wake up people that hasn't been tapping into this kind of information at all, or just getting into this kind of information and turning off the TV and so on, and going into alternative news like yourself and other people that are working very hard for many years.
Well, it does take a lot of years of dedication, essentially. It's not like a weekend retreat. It kind of just becomes your life.
Yeah.
It becomes who you hang out with. It becomes what you talk about. It becomes how you heal yourself of disease. It becomes how you entertain yourself.
Correct. Absolutely. And I can see this becoming my life as well, because volume 2 is on its way, starting it. I will start that in July. So it's so many questions. I needed to put it down to 14, but I'm asking people to mail me as well different new questions for the next volume, and people to interview as well, because these guys that are in the book are absolutely amazing. Do you want me to tell you who they are?
Well, sure. It just sounds like you're like on the beginning road to making the encyclopedia Conspiritanica.
It would be fantastic, you know, because it's, I mean, if you've never been into this kind of field, or you never tapped into yourself or radios or books or YouTube channels like this, the internet can be quite daunting, and the information age like we live in today, you don't know really where to start. So I thought I'd pick 8 people that I respect a lot, and I ask them some questions and then start from there, you know. So in the book, it's Ken O'Keefe, Sam Gardner, Carrie Cassidy, Kevin Barrett, David Icke, Cynthia McKinney, Sophia Smallstorm, and Ole Damegaard.
The only person I haven't interviewed out of that bunch is Cynthia McKinney. And I've tried, and she sent an email back, but it just hasn't eventuated yet.
Very busy lady, yeah. She's amazing, though. She does so much good, so, yeah.
Hence the interview request.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
And for you personally, I mean, why did you get into this whole field of conspiracy and stuff?
Well, for me, I think it started since I was a child, really. I mean, I'm brought up with a mom and dad, and especially grandparents, that has taught me that it's okay to question authority. It's okay not to do what everybody else does. And when I was in my teens, I kind of felt that the news that we were being fed and the newspapers and so on and politics wasn't my interest at all. And I had a feeling that it was a play more than the truth. It was something behind the screens that was going on that I couldn't put my finger on. But I think it's about 19, 20 years ago now that David Icke's book, Robots Rebellions, landed on my desk. And I read that and was amazed by the information. And I thought, my God, this is a fantastic, you know, somebody putting this kind of information into a book. But then I started to be very angry, frustrated, because nobody wanted to know. And this is just when the internet started, you know, it wasn't like I could send a link to somebody.
What I love about that phrase, I was really angry and frustrated and nobody wanted to know. What I find ironic about that is I know heaps of people who have told me that exact same thing, and I know that many more feel it because I've felt it too. It's called awakening from the fact that you've been a dupe your entire life and that you're not free at all. You're a complete slave.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think everybody has to go through that a little bit. I went through it for some years, being really frustrated because I felt so alone, you know. But these days, I think it's easier because you're not alone. There's lots of people out there that are, you know, awakening up the like popcorn around us, which is so lovely to see. But I met Ola just after that. So I, you know, that was the first friend I felt like that I could speak to this about. So, and from there, it's just, you know, we've been living together now for a long time. So it's part of my life, you know, because I live with a person that are researching every day. That's his job, like your job.
Well, I think some... One of my elders told me a piece of advice. He said, take care of your relationships because it's very hard to have a relationship with the back of somebody's head.
Yeah. Good one.
You know, I thought that was quite wise, you know, and sometimes you just got to unplug the screen and kind of realize that it's the people around you that are really valuable. In fact, I was having a thought about this today. When you're interacting with your screen or even when you're interacting with other people online, when you're in person, there's actually an energy transfer that goes on between people. Sometimes it's negative when somebody's sucking your energy, like the kind of people who are always complaining about how terrible their job is whenever they're finished work, and they kind of drain the blood right out of your face and brain places. You know, it's just horrible people. And then there's those people who are energetic. They actually give you energy back when you send it up, and you grow this big ball of it together, and you kind of excite each other, and you make each other feel better, and you share that energy, as opposed to having it taken from you by some kind of sociopathic, complaining, whinging moron, right? And when you're on the computer, doesn't matter whether you're interacting with somebody who's inspiring or not. They can't actually send the energy. They can't actually send the positive energy through to you. And I'm wondering if there's some kind of residual effect on people that actually are starting to make them feel lonely when they've never communicated with more people before in their life.
Yeah, I completely agree. And they've done when they do happy studies or research, they say it's not money, it's not fame that makes people happy, it's relationships. So it's really important to get out there and connect and communicate with other people and turn off the screen. Absolutely.
Well, at least occasionally, because, you know, us conspiracy theorists have got work to do. And
of course. But in moderation, no? That's the fine line.
Oh, yeah.
It is easy to get caught up and you just sit for hours and hours. But we try to turn the everything off once a week, actually, on Saturday. So we try to just check the emails in the morning and then just not have any screens at all. And it's amazing. You do stuff and you go out in nature, you meet people and so on. So it's good to do once a week.
Imagine that, ladies and gentlemen, actually doing stuff with your life and communicating with people for real in the flesh. it's been worn down to a novelty now, isn't it? Anyway, beyond this, when you go through this wake-up process, you get to some other point. You come to this sort of realization about where you fit into the world, and what you actually want to contribute to it, because your understanding of the world goes beyond yourself. It's not just I'm having a job and getting a house and having a family and going to see sports games. You know, that's actually people's entire life planned out, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, when you stop being brainwashed, in fact, I don't think anybody stopped being brainwashed just yet. There's just a little bit left for a lot of us. When you stop living the mainstream life, I think, you have to figure out how to live your life again. But it, this time, it actually is your life to live.
Yeah, absolutely. And it can be, you know, it's for me, I went into from frustration and anger to judging a lot. You know, I in my head, I was chopping people into pieces because I thought, my God, they, you know, they're just robots walking around, not realizing. And that's a hard place to be as well, because then you can't connect with anybody unless they're on the same level as you. So very lonely, very frustrating, and judging, I did for a long time.
I remember like one time I was like walking down the street just looking at people, you know, making assumptions and deductions about how many vaccines they've had, how much fluoride is in their brain places right now calcifying up their pineal gland, how many GMOs they've probably eaten today, how many aspartame sticks of gum they need in order to get to sleep at night, you know, just really crazy stuff just going off and
Yeah. And I was going down the, you know, just shopping for groceries for the family. And I can just looking in what everybody else is shopping. And I'm thinking, my God, their brain are with GMOs and stuff like that. But, you know, when you step out of that as well, because it's timing with people, I find. You can't shove this information down people's throats. They need to, there's something inside that kind of wakes you up. It might be a book, it might be a radio show, it might be whatever, but it needs to be in their time, you know.
When I was a boy, there was this beach that we lived next to, and there was a bit of a cave there, and I saw this rock that was sort of in the roof of the cave there, and it looked pretty precarious. I tried to get it out, it wouldn't come out. And I think it maybe took about 10 years for those waves to just keep bashing it and bashing it and bashing it and bashing it until eventually something that I thought was stubborn as rock that would never give way fell off on its own and into the water. Right? It's the same thing with people's minds. And it's the same way you brainwash people. It's the same way that you unbrainwash them. You just got to keep hitting them and hitting them and hitting them. Statistically, it takes like 7 different people. You know, people think that it's just like about repetition. No. You've got to have different people doing the repetition. That's why it's a kind of a team effort. If you have one person who thinks 9/11 was the fault of 19 hijackers with box cutters, you know, they're gonna take a little bit of time before they sit up and realize, oh my God. It was pulled off by a bunch of Israeli spies who were acting as Arab terrorists who look virtually identical anyway when you have a look at the pictures in them, operating on false passports with a commander-in-chief and 2 cronies Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld in the Pentagon calling the shots and then shooting down one of the planes and then having another one crash into the Pentagon and laundering a whole bunch of money and destroying the stock exchange making all the gambling on flights and everything like that. Oh my God, it's a conspiracy to get people to be really afraid of a fictional terrorist, a cell that doesn't even exist and that they had to create in the first place just so that they could get people to give up all their liberties and freedoms and become willing subservient slaves, one nation under surveillance. Now, it takes a few people to take you from point A to point B like that, you know? to come and give you that sort of a breakdown.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, and that's what's foolish about people. It's like being young. When you're young, you've got no patience, and you've got an objective, and you want to achieve it as quick as possibly can. You know, while we're still young, that kind of thing. No. The New World Order didn't take over the world by playing the short game. They took it over playing the long game. And I think it might take us another 100 years or so of spreading the truth and resisting tyranny before the 100-year cycle of tyranny that wound up actually giving us the society that we currently live in reaches fruition.
I do hope it's going to go faster, though.
Yeah, well, I like to think about what... I'm doing the majority of the talking on this one, aren't I? But one more thing. One more thing that I was taught by an elder. He said, the reason why we're resisting the government, the reason why we're trying to protect people from their laws and things like that and pointing them out and trying to take them to task over it, it isn't for us. It isn't for our kids. And it isn't for our grandkids. It's for those little children that aren't born yet, who don't actually have a choice in the matter, who aren't here to be represented. That's what they said that they were trying to resist the government for. You know, these are like old, Māori people. And I kind of thought about this, and it's like, that is the view of an elder that they need to take, because with the benefit of having that much experience and seeing that much time, seeing people be born, grow old, and die, it makes you think that it's a cycle and that you need to play a part in that cycle that is beyond you. Otherwise, your existence becomes meaningless because you're not passing on anything.
Absolutely. I think it's the Native Americans that say that they used to think seven generations ahead, which I find that's the way to do it. If you're going to follow a leader, you know, if somebody says, yeah, let's talk about what happened seven generations ahead if we do this or if we do that and see what the consequences are. That's planning ahead. And that we don't do so much, but we need to start doing that.
Now, there's the other question as well. How exactly do you come up with a plan to counter the plan, like the biggest plan that has ever been perpetrated on the entire world simultaneously? How do you come up with a plan to defuse that? See, it's impossible for one person to come up with a scheme, isn't it? So, but that plan has little tendrils and things like that, and it's just a. I think it's about resources. Okay, you got a spider in the middle, and it needs the resources to come back to it. It needs those signals to travel along the web. What it just needs to do is have that web destroyed around it, so that you can cut off. What was it they said in Jaws? You can either kill this animal or you can cut off its food supply.
Yeah, but I do think, though, I can't, for me to see it, and I think for most people to see it, like, we need to come up with a plan and who's going to do that and so on, the ultimate plan for the world and so on. I think, and the, you know, the people in the book as well, and it's amazing because they come from so many different backgrounds and so on, but they all come to kind of the conclusion that you need to start with yourself and take responsibility for your own steps. And I think as well, because we meditate daily, and we've been in the spiritual path of the yoga philosophy for some 10, 11 years now. And it's a lot about coming down from the head into the heart. And when you land there, you don't get caught up in nonsense so much, and you go into more, how can I serve daily instead of what can I get, if you know what I mean. So when people start doing that more and more, it will automatically change around us. So if we start with ourselves, which is, it's not easy. I mean, I'm the work in progress always, you know. It's not something that happens in a week. So that's, again, you're coming back to the patience you were talking about.
I would like to see somebody sit up and you go, I'm done. You're done what, bro? Yeah. I'm done developing and evolving. I'm sweet, bro. I've sussed it, all right?
Yeah.
I've learned everything I possibly can.
Yeah.
Yes, Jimmy. You know, what did you think? You know, the most complex conspiracy that's been kept secret from mankind for thousands of years is going to have like a solution. You know, like an easy one that you're going to understand. Yeah, it's like that's the thing. Nobody has a problem solver, okay, for this problem, all right? But no. A lot of people try to say that they do. Isn't that interesting? Have you noticed that? Mm. All these false prophets out there who just kind of like get these followings full of people. Oh, we just need to do this. We just need to do that. I think that humanity is far more complex than that. I think it's like getting somebody to lead you to freedom because you can't do it yourself is a really, really foolish thing to do. And to be honest, I think everybody has their own way of contributing, much like every organ in the human body. You think the kidney sits there at night just wishing he was a heart or wishing he was a brain so that he'd feel more important? You know, what happens when the body's got no kidneys? It's fucked, all right? What happens when it has any organ missing, you know? Well, apart from what was it? The pancreas or the wachius? Why do they make everything Latin to make it sound more complicated? Okay, ladies and gentlemen, the Latin for joint pain, wait for it, is arthritis. Okay, I've just explained what doctor's trick is to make you think they're more intelligent than they actually are. They translate ordinary stuff into a dead language so that people don't speak, so that they can make you think that they're smarter than you because they know a dead language and you don't. All right?
Yeah. Well, coming back to the, I do agree with that. Don't follow anybody to find your whatever freedom of mind or peace of mind or... But I think it's good teachers and mentors out there, though. I mean, it's like you have, if when you grow up, you learn to read from somebody. And then when you know how to read, you kind of drop that person because you know how to do it yourself.
It's the difference between learning from someone and following someone.
Yeah, for sure.
Being inspired, I think, is what you're after.
Yeah.
Because inspiration is like, you're a canister of gas and inspiration is simply an igniter. All right, that's all that it is. That's what I'm looking for in my daily life, is people to inspire me, who give me energy and let me take it off and don't ask anything in return, because they're not trying to take something from me. They're not trying to make me give 10% of what I earn off of their ideas back to them. They're just trying to inspire me and make me a better person.
Yeah. And they're amazing to be around, don't you think?
Oh, you get chills, you know? And... I mean, I'm pretty famous in my own right nowadays, but I'm still like a fanboy at heart, bro. You know, like, I try to... I get an email from David Icke's people today, or yesterday it was, and saying that they're going to give me some free tickets to go see David Icke, and I'm skipping around the house like a schoolgirl, bumping into stuff, you know?
Yeah,
it's,
of course.
It's pretty embarrassing, and I shouldn't reveal stuff like that on talk radio. Moving on... But that's the whole thing, though. They're people that just fill you full of energy and vibrancy and that kind of thing. They're fun to be around, and they don't ask anything of you, you know.
Fantastic.
Unlike me, I'm more of a beneficial parasite. You know, that's why I masquerade as a talk radio show host. Now, getting back to this this awakening process, you know, you come out of it. And I think, as we've said, and I think it actually bears repeating, that it's not all your awakening isn't going to happen in a day. It's a long process, and you're never actually going to be fully awake. You're always going to be learning something and learning you're an idiot tomorrow, just like you're just slightly less of an idiot today, all right? But never forget that it's possible that you can be fooled. Right? It's possible that you can be manipulated. Be open to those suggestions. Because it's when people get puritanical and they stop using knowledge and instead start basing their life around beliefs and beliefs alone without the knowledge and the facts and the justification behind those actions, that's when you start to get cult leaders. That's when you start to follow people who are crazy, psychopathic users who will hurt you and get you to hurt other people.
Yeah, absolutely correct. Yeah, and I think it's when people have, they don't really know who they are, and they are fearful, and they look elsewhere, they look outside themselves to kind of find the solution instead of looking, going in, which isn't easy, you know, but it's worth it though. And it's fun to watch and start asking yourself questions about yourself. Who am I? You know, who am I really? That's a biggie for me. I love asking myself that because I still get answers. You know, it's a fun ride, that one.
Well, I consider myself my own policeman, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What are you doing here? What are you doing here, Vinny? Oh, nothing. I'm just smoking Cerebro. All right, on your way.
Correct. Yeah.
You know, because you can't expect everybody else to watch on you, but, you know, I think, what was it my dad told me once? He said, using the word quite a lot today. Anyway, he said that he doesn't have any friends that can't build something. Every friend that he ever had knows how to build stuff. Doesn't matter whether they're an electrician or a builder or a bricklayer or something like that. They're just people who know how to create things in the 3D reality.
Wow.
And I thought about that and I was like, whoa. I didn't want to be like my dad. I wanted to be different. I wanted to evolve from what he was. So I amassed myself a circle of friends who exposed scumbaggery. Now, one of the benefits of this is if I, heaven forbid, start even, you know, hinting at signs of turning into some kind of scumbag, the people who are my friends, who expose scumbaggery for a living, will probably notice it, pull me up on it, and prevent me from going down that dark road. Or, if they're too late, they'll know me so well and all my darkest secrets and everything that they'll be able to dethrone me and make people stop trusting me really quickly by showing my complete and utter betrayal.
Mm.
And that's what I wish for, essentially.
Me
I want
too.
To be a, I want to be a prisoner in the prison that I built myself just the way I like it.
Absolutely. And tell me straight, please. You know. So tell me in my face, not behind my back.
Have you noticed how some people, they confuse being honest with being rude?
Yeah.
They have that about them. They think they're better than you, but they're not. Because nobody's better than anybody. Everybody's just a little bit different. There's some people who are just filth and scum, who are just bad people, on the other hand. And you can differentiate them aside, but they're still people. They're not like the other. They're just the kind of people you don't want in your life. They're not the people you go out and attack and try and kill and destroy. They're the kind of people you just kick out of your home into the street in the middle of the night and throw their bedding out with them and just say, hey, bro, no, you're not coming back in the house. All right, you can sleep on the side of the road like a dog. Off you go. Off you go. That's right.
Yeah, absolutely, I agree. It's difficult sometimes, though, but ignore the wicked. We kind of have a saying, but sometimes they're kind of in your face and you can't get rid of them, so what do you do? But it's a lesson, and I don't believe in coincidences. I do believe that the people that are coming into the circle in your life are there for a reason. If you need to learn something or if they need to learn something, who knows? But it's hard to keep the balance sometimes, but we try here anyway to kind of see what's the reason for this, or why did this situation occur? And because it's never going to be just smooth, this ride. It's going to be up and down like a roller coaster. When it's down, it's good to have people like you talked about, your friends around you, you know, to pick you up or to tell you differently. You know, now you need to get out of your big head and calm down a little bit.
Well, for me, that's really helpful, actually, because just thinking about this, what were the traumas in my life? It was getting busted for weed when I was 20, and it was losing like 3 jobs in a row, and it was getting screwed over by a person in the truth movement who stole my company off me. And in retrospect, what these 3 things were trying to teach me is, number one, you can't trust people just because you're having a session with them, just because you're having a drink with them, just because you live with them. You can't actually trust them. And it's their character that you have to be able to discern and decipher so that you don't have your life infected and surrounded by people who will betray you. The second one is when if you're in an organization and it's a hierarchical organization and you're just at an entry level, the people at the top of that organization aren't going to like you telling them how to run their business, even if you have better ideas than they do. They won't appreciate it. And in fact, if they do appreciate it, they'll steal your ideas and take credit for it. And the third one was just because you've come out of the quote-unquote mainstream real world and gone into the truth movement that's all about liberty and love and happiness and resistance doesn't mean that people didn't take their old world mentality into this arena with them. Everything that is bad about people exists in this movement just like it exists in normal society.
Yeah.
I needed to be screwed over those three times in order to learn those three very valuable lessons. And now everybody's who was listening to what I just said got all those lessons for free, but they don't value those lessons because they didn't. It didn't cost them anything to receive them.
Yeah.
Because I found that the lessons that have cost me the most have been the most valuable.
Absolutely, for sure. They hurt like hell, though, when they happen. But looking back, they're the biggest and the best, for sure. I completely agree with you there.
I wonder about which conspiracy is it that kind of woke you up in the first place? Because everybody's like got this one.
Yeah. I think I hated school. I really hated it. I got out as fast as I could because I thought they were trying to put me in one of these square boxes and I was trying to break out. So the school system, but then I don't think I realized it until a little bit later. But the system or the programming, because being brought up in Sweden is very much, we got something called the Janta law in Sweden. It's not actually a law, but it's something that every Swede or every Scandinavian knows about. And that it kind of means that don't put your head up there because, you know, you need to be equal with everybody else and so on. And I always put my head up there. So for me, it was school, I think. And then coming into normal life, I always ask question, why do we have this law? You know, why I didn't make this law. And these laws that are popping up daily, you know, the society is making new laws all the time. And I didn't understand why we need all these laws. And I was breaking a few and, you know, and I thought that, so school and the society, the programming and laws. And yeah, that was the one for me, I think, in my teens, early 20s.
Yeah, I think I got that in university, I think. I wrote the best essay I'd ever written in my life. Like, I'd never done, you know, full-on bibliography and read source material and stuff like that. But for this essay, I did, because it was anti-television essay. It was one of the topics we were able to do. And I was like, oh, yeah, baby, this is really getting my juices flowing. And it turns out that all my theories about TV, how it's really bad for people, how it makes them stupid, how it destroys their attention span, how it misinforms them about shit and makes them into slaves, were things that had actually already been come up with by people in the 1950s when television was first like starting to become a reality for a lot of people. like all these old people who are like most of them dead. All agreed with my views, and I put them all down on stuff, and I showed it to my friend's dad, who's an English professor there. He loved it, you know. Great essay, he said, great essay. And they gave me a D-. And I was just like instantly, boom, okay, this education system is not for me because it's not trying to teach me critical thinking. It's trying to teach me to be critical of people who can think.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, school is great for some people, but
I disagree. I think it's really bad for everybody, and it's especially bad for those who think it's good.
Yeah, mine. But I see some kids, you know, we homeschool our daughter at the moment. We didn't with our boys, they're 22 now. But I see a complete difference. And some kids in her age, they really like school, but it's not that many that do. I hated it. I mean, I've been studying later on in my years, but then I picked what I wanted to study because I wanted to learn it. But it's school, it's the first that we kind of go into this slave society, and it starts really young, doesn't it? Here in Spain, they start when they're three. It's awful.
That's like child abuse, bro. All right. For those who don't understand what education is, it's a mind control institution, more specifically a trauma-based mind control institution. Trauma-based mind control has a couple of very simple principles. Sleep deprivation. Anybody sleep well, Raoul, when they were going to school at real early o'clock in the morning when your brain doesn't wake up until at least 10, 11 o'clock in the morning? At those age? No? No? Okay, sleep deprivation. Let's put that one down. And submission to a central authority figure. You got a whole class of children around what? A teacher who's the central authority figure for your class? Okay, we'll put that one down. Is that teacher under another central authority figure called a principal? Yes, they are. Okay, put that one down. What else? What else have we got here? Ostracization of the independent thinkers. Anybody else start talking really differently to other people and then start getting ostracized because they believe something different to the group, and then they wind up not having any friends or having much success and stuff like that, and keep getting poo-pooed and bullied around? Okay, that's another aspect of trauma-based mind control. We'll put that there as well. There you have it. Oh, but let's not forget the most important thing. Repetition. Did you know that repetition's a form of mind control? Did you know that mind control's addictive? People have found. You ever notice that people start going crazy when they're not having the TV in front of them running all the time? You know? It's because they're addicted to that mind control that's coming off of it, and they love it. Have you ever tried to study for exams, for school at all? By chance, did you have to repeatedly go through a whole bunch of stuff over and over in order to memorize it? Okay, let's put repetition down as well. So those four basic tenets of mind control: sleep deprivation, central authority figure, ostracization of outsiders, i.e. silo mentality, and repetition, is the borders, the walls, the four walls that keep your mind in a prison. Now, people want to send their children to school because they've got to work. You know, they don't have that kind of time on their hands and stuff like that. But make time. Once you realise what you're getting yourself into. But of course, because I'm not a parent, I can't say that, and I'm judging from a position where it's so much easier to judge, and I'm sorry about that. But still, it doesn't change the fact that school's a trauma-based mind control program, all right? And if you're willingly sending your children, knowingly sending your children into a trauma-based mind control program, I question your parenting methodology just a fraction, you know? Once you know, then the obligation's on you. But if you're ignorant in the first place, if your parents were ignorant, I don't think there's any fault on you because you did nothing wrong. It was the state that brainwashed you. And your parents, and most of the generations before that. That's pretty unfortunate. Do you know where I'm still going, aren't I? Oh my God, I am so sorry.
No, I love listening. You got some really good stuff to say.
One last thing. Do you know where school actually originated? You know?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, the French-Prussian War, right?
Yeah, the British Empire.
No. The French-Prussian War. The Prussians, you know, what became Germany for a large part. It was a much, much bigger empire. And they had this war against France just before World War I. The Prussians beat the French down big time, like big time. They massively massacred them. And the only difference between the two countries at the time, they had similar levels of technology and wealth and that kind of thing, was an education system that the Prussians had installed, a public education system that forcibly took children away from their parents and put them into government institutions and filled their heads full of pro-Prussian propaganda, so that when Prussia declared war, they had a huge amount of recruits turn up, just like that, at the beck and call of the government. And they were so dedicated to going to war to die for their country, which they really were brainwashed into loving, more than their own life. They were great soldiers. And right afterwards, every single major Western government in the world started up their own public education system. In the United States, there was a lot of resistance to public education, and cavalry, actual cavalry, was sent into towns to lasso children who parents were keeping away from these mind control institutions and drag them out of town to go to school. Right? No shit. That is public education, ladies and gentlemen. It's a mind control institution that you are forced to go to by the government so that they can brainwash you into loving them and not resisting them and, in fact, dying for them. That's why. Thank that's you. How much I hate school. That. Yeah.
Because I heard, yeah, me too. Because it comes from, and it's so. I heard a different story that it comes from the British Empire, and they needed people to read, write, and count in the same way. Because when they were sending their ships and started to do business, you know, they had these. The British Empire has been all over the world, as we all know. But they needed people to count and read and write in exactly the same way. So when the ships came back as well, the business and the commercial, you know, it could carry on. So that's where it came from, I heard. But this sounds very, I didn't know what you just said. So fantastic. Thank you for that information.
You're welcome. There's actually a chronology to it. You know, that's how you can sometimes tell the difference between something somebody made up. And I would probably say that that's not too far off the truth either, because guess what happened in the end of the late 1800s? You know, British and all of these other imperialists were charking all around Africa and that kind of thing. I mean, sure, I'm pretty sure they had a great use for public education at the time, and conveniently, after they stole the idea off the Prussians, they did.
Is it legal to homeschool in New Zealand?
It's quasi-legal. you know, it's only illegal if you get caught. I honestly don't know. I know a couple of people, and indeed a friend of mine from school who was homeschooled until I think the age of 13 or whatever. So you can homeschool in New Zealand, no problem.
Fantastic.
However, that's another interesting point to note. If any idea to save the world or awaken the world doesn't also include contingency plans to counter mind control tactics, counter propaganda, counter terrorism, counter intelligence, etc., if you don't have those vehicles in there that approach and address the exact mechanisms by which the system will react to protect itself, much like you have to essentially disable the New World Order's immune system if you want to do any damage to its, you know, actual body, I feel. And counterintelligence, counter surveillance, and counter this, counter that, and the other is probably one of the central pillars behind the growth, rather, of any movement that really has meaningful potential, right? A lot of people have meaningful intentions, you know, the Thrive Movement, the Venus Project, and so on and so forth. These are great ideas, I felt. But they were naive to think that the system would just let it happen and that they wouldn't have an enormous tool bag of subversion tactics with which to derail, divert, and destroy and or slow you down.
Yeah, it's sad to see, because that's what happened. That's why I think all these people that I interviewed as well, they've been working, you know, uphill and against the wind for years and years and years, because it's not an easy field to work in. I could never do what you do or these guys do. I need to have my balance, because it's quite, you're working against everything, really. But more and more people are, like you said, it's timing with people to wake up. But they are, it's going pretty fast now, don't you think?
Yeah, well, don't discount yourself. One never knows the strength of steel until it is tested.
Yeah.
And the more trauma and suffering you have in your life, generally the stronger you become, because the tree that is blown by the strongest winds develops the strongest roots.
Right, absolutely. Yeah. No, that's why I admire all these people that I interviewed, and you guys as well. You know, you do amazing work, because you wouldn't do this. Anybody like these guys, they wouldn't do this if they weren't that strong and courageous. I think they're really courageous.
Well, I don't know. Me, I'm terrified. I just I'm just more frightened of what'll happen if I do nothing. You know.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. One fear just sort of beats out the other. I haven't achieved any, I haven't actually achieved any real feeling of zen or contentment, because to me it's just an endless war type thing. You know, you have to be there manning the post, otherwise, you know, the enemy might slip through the gates and kill all the people you've been fighting beside all this time. And it's not about me, it's not about anything that I really want to achieve in life. Mostly it's just about the people next to me, and I feel that I'm the one who has the ability, has the responsibility to go with it. And in New Zealand there's just bugger all people doing radio and YouTubing and stuff and giving the activists a platform. So until somebody else is capable of doing it, perhaps, you know, better than me, I'll be doing it till I'm dead. Yeah.
Yeah, it's your dharma, it's your calling, no? Which is fantastic.
I don't know, I was just kind of forced into it, really. Well, you know, after my traumatic experiences and stuff like that, I've developed a made-up mental illness called employophobia, a fear of gainful employment. So I had to figure out a way of being employed forever without the possibility of ever losing my job, but without ever having a boss. And the job title I came up with is exposing scumbaggery, you know, because it's not like we're going to run out of scumbaggery, is it? I call it gainful, yeah. You know, eternal employment.
Oh, very clever. That's a good one. That's very smart. No, it's the same for me. I didn't choose this. I didn't really choose to do this book. But it's something. Sometimes I feel you're just being used, you know. An idea comes up in your head, and you think, okay, let's do it, you know, because it doesn't shut up until you actually do it. So I know that feeling for sure.
I think maybe that's why people turn to drugs and alcohol and Miley Cyrus, because, you know. Let's face it, not fulfilling your potential and not having the ideas in your head played out in reality in front of you through your own volition robs you of the meaning of life. And you need to have something that either numbs you to your life and yourself, or numbs your brain sufficiently so that you don't even know what your life or yourself is anymore, hence the Miley Cyrus. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. That's Vinny with a Y, because the most important question, Eastwood, like, go ahead. Make my news. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's been going for quite some time now, and for those of you who have been donating regularly, monthly, into the bank accounts and into the PayPal and everything, your contributions always make the difference between being able to pay the rent at the end of the week and not being able to pay the rent at the end of the week. Isn't that something? Ah, really appreciate it, actually. I mean, I don't have a whole lot of spare income, but I have what most people who have spare income don't have. The freedom to do with my time what I choose, and it is you, the listener, who grant me that ability. And and that's probably because what I choose to do with my time is expose scumbaggery. And you like the way I do that? I do make exposing scumbaggery a lot more fun than the average cat, I must say. But I'm biased. Of course I am. Anyway, my very special guest joining me is Kim Ekman. And Kim, I don't think we divulged your website and your book.
Well, the book is called So What Can I Do? Answers from Inspired Researchers About the World Today. And, well, it's basically 14 questions asked to 8 amazing researchers and people that are working to spread the true news about the world and how we can, what we can do about it. Because I think everybody's asking now and again, so what can I do? And everybody can do something, you know. You don't need money to do something. You can do, you know, so many things. So you do get some answers in this book, absolutely. And the website, and please, people, if you like, email me if you've got questions for Volume 2 or people that you would like me to interview, another 14 questions. So the website, you can, it's under construction at the moment. We're putting it together now, but awakeandunite.com. And my email is info@awakeandunite.com.
So get involved. Most people awaken to daylight, but no, we're going to awaken to unite.
Yeah. Awake, yeah.
Because, you know, you're Scandinavian. You haven't seen daylight in, like, months.
Oh, yeah, but I live in Spain, really.
Oh, okay.
I haven't lived in Sweden for 16 years.
Okay, then just consider it a flippant, derogatory comment to your people.
I know darkness. It's really dark up there at the moment.
Yeah, if you think you know darkness, you haven't been to the New Zealand Parliament building.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Oh, it's a scary place, man. Like, the High Court's like covered in like these monster faces and things like that, and it's like, whoa.
Oh, I know.
Oh, okay, so this is the justice system, eh? You've got a building encrusted with handcrafted demons. Okay. Yeah. Is there any symbolism inherent in that? No, not at all, not at all. So we're not walking into some kind of satanic ritual and that's why you're wearing black robes and shit, bro? No, none of that. So this isn't part of some kind of occult ceremony because you're wearing a Masonic ring either? No, not at all, mate, not at all. So why aren't you recording any of the court sessions then? Oh, well, you know, just because. Just... All right, these people are scary. And the scariest people are the ones that you don't see coming, I think. Is it? Woof. Man.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And one of the questions in the book is, because I think the questions as well, if I may just talk about the questions a little bit, it's like for people, I pick questions that, you know, that are in our lives daily, like, does it matter if we vote or not, money, vaccinations, countries, and so on, because people are, it's in their lives daily, and it's amazing what kind of answers you get, because people still vote, which to me is, I don't know how to say it or call it, but voting, does it matter if we vote or not, really? These days, does anybody trust politicians these days?
Well, the word is irrelevant.
Yeah. How do you mean irrelevant?
Well, then it's just another word for something that doesn't matter.
Yeah, absolutely. Completely.
Although, the other day I did come up with a meme. We've got a local Auckland election coming up here for the council. And one of the ladies standing is Penny Bright, who I have on the program regularly. And so I was just thinking about, like, Penny Bright. And, like, I love Penny, you know. Beside my wife, she's the only woman I love. And she's just a spectacular lady. And I tried to figure out, what could I do to convince people to vote for her? You know, like, really? Because she got, like, the fourth highest polling candidate the last time she stood. And I thought about Penny's history and doing a documentary and all of that kind of stuff. And I go, no, too long, too boring. People don't want to watch a documentary about the person they're voting for, generally. So I made it into a meme. How many Auckland mayoral candidates, A, you know, one, received a good citizenship award, two, risked losing their freehold home by disputing and refusing to pay rates, three, wants Auckland Council to open the books as they're required to do by law, four, beat the council 21 out of 22 times in court, 5, know more about Auckland Council's statutory requirements than the council does. 6, promises to do anything about or even mention Auckland's corruption. Or 6, have a 30-plus year track record of self-sacrifice for the good of Aucklanders and New Zealand. None, except Her Worship, Penny Bright. There is no other choice for Auckland. Vote Penny Bright. You know?
Mm.
It just kind of, for me, that's who Penny is, because I know her quite well, and I know her history, and I think a lot of people don't, and they need to be brought up to speed, because politics is an irrelevant race when you have irrelevant candidates, I think.
Or if they're just puppets, and there's, you know, whatever goes on behind doors, we don't see, and the puppet is just there to be on TV. And so I think, you know, like voting on local levels, where you have the transparency, they should work for the people, which they don't at the moment. They work for corporations.
So we need to elect fighters to go in to bat on our behalf. Essentially, that's how I feel. On governance matters, I mean, we shouldn't be, over reliant on that. I mean, voting's just one thing you do every couple of years or whatever. So, I still do it usually just because I try to vote for the biggest troublemaker I can find on the ballot sheet. You know, you know, for the entertainment value, because politics is very boring without troublemakers. However, I also try to make sure that those people get some coverage and do what I can for them. I mean, I'm very, very, very small in New Zealand by comparison to, say, the mainstream media and a lot of the mainstream right-wing, left-wing, false paradigm shills and scum. But, you know, sometimes just having somebody on your side is better than having nobody at all.
Sure, absolutely, yeah. But how does it work there in Auckland? How is it the local election that you're talking about now?
Yeah, just for our city, you know, how you elect a mayor.
Yeah. Okay, so then it's more transparent then.
Yeah, I mean, we've got probably one of the most corrupt councils ever. They can make money up out of thin air. The council is actually a corporation now, not a government or independent body or anything like that. It's all completely owned by companies, more or less, who are now renting the city out to themselves and then selling themselves billions of dollars worth of city assets for pennies on the dollar and increasing people's rates in some cases like 10 or 100% or whatever in some areas. You know, it's just like absolutely crazy, just milking everybody and creating a whole bunch of crisis and tens of billions of dollars of debt for a city that's only got like 1 million people. You know, so it's pretty corrupt. And none of the candidates, except Penny, talks about our corruption problem, you know? That's actually the very source of our problems, you know? It's just like, a fish rots from the head, baby. The Chinese had it right. Mm. You smell something fishy, have a look at right at the top.
Mm.
Now, in terms of living in Europe and living in Spain, and sunny Spain, right? How's that been? Is there... Because I notice whenever I move to particular areas, I see the same problems that I had in my old area, just with a different face or a different shape or a different language on it.
Yeah, I think, it's a different shape, but it's still there. It's I think it's in Spain because it's... we moved to Spain when it wasn't even the euro. It was Pesetas. That's when we moved here 16 years ago. So it's changed. It's gone through phases, but it's still, like you say, it's still the same. But here you see the corruption. It's more in your face. In Sweden, it's hidden, you know, because the surface needs to be really, really pretty and so on. So it's behind the scenes more. But here in Spain, you get it more in your face, which in a way I like better because then you know what you're facing and what's around you. But it's the same. I think it's the same all over the world when it comes to corruption and how it works.
Yeah. In fact, I was just editing a small clip. Damn, I've got to get this clip out there. Whew. Thank God I reminded myself of that. Of Gordon Bowden. I'm not sure if you know who he is, but dig this. There are at least thousands and thousands of fake oil, gas and mining companies that have been set up all over the world, and politicians and people of note, you know, people from the House of Lords, the House of Commons, or like from the US Senate or whatever, who have vouched for these companies and their existence, and these people own their own video production companies and photographs and everything, and they do these big commercial campaigns to get all these mum and dad investors to sink all their seed capital into these companies, and then they pump and dump them, steal all the money, and then launder the money back through other seed companies that they set up at the same time that they're also the directors of. And they've stolen, they can easily steal hundreds of billions of pounds a year, like without even thinking about it, you know. And it's like, whoa, these are the people that actually own the world now through fraud. Like, through full-on fraud, and they own everything, Virg. About 60% of the world's economy is controlled by 171 companies, and those 171 companies are owned by 8 people. You know? Okay, the math starts to get a little bit freaky when you think that those 8 people are worth several trillion dollars apiece. Minimum. Not even the stuff that we can't see, or their blind trusts and stuff that they keep away from public view, you know? Freaky stuff, isn't it?
No.
Yeah, and he goes into detail about all this, and is doing it very forensically, and I'm just thinking, like, wow, there's so many people I wanted to meet, and there's so many ideas that run through. The lesson of networking. People get it wrong. Networking isn't about going to an event or a function or whatever and getting a whole bunch of new business contacts for yourself. No, not just that. Networking is about thinking about who you know, and relating to who you're just meeting now, and think about whether or not they would be a good business contact for each other, and hooking them up, right? Yeah. And a lot of this happens in the truth movement, where people are like talk radio show hosts or bloggers or something like that, and they just hook people up. There's this really interesting little social network connection I found that's going on, and it's happening in a very universal flow type of way. Like, I don't even need to churn the handle; it just moves on its own.
Yeah, it's organic, isn't it? It's amazing that way.
Yeah. I mean, things are much better when they're grown organic, you know? You can't engineer these kind of relationships, otherwise you'd be a psychopathic scumbag.
Yeah. Correct.
You know, because that's what's cool, because, you know, you're using Ole Damegaard's Skype right now in order to conduct this interview. Right.
Yeah.
And you've been living with him all the time, and I've known Olav for years, but I haven't even heard of you until just a couple of days ago. And see, that's how things happen. They happen quickly. It's like change. Change is slow until it gets a lot faster. Mm-hmm. Now, going back to the questions there, sorry, I'm doing a hell of a lot of ranting today. It's
good when it's so early for me, so I feel like my brain is kind of, I'm waking up, and I'm like, so it's fantastic.
Yeah, I'm waking up to ash and dust, I wipe my brow and I sweat my rust. There's a lyrics from a song, by the way. Anyway, okay, so everybody kind of has their own way to fit into the scheme, a general scheme of things, and you've tried to write a book based upon basically the answers to a couple of questions from 8 people who I consider to be some of the best people I've interviewed, really, and I've interviewed hundreds, thousands of people. You know. So that must have actually been quite an experience for you, because I recall when I was making my John Key Exposed in 6 Minutes video, and I had access to 4 of, like, some of the best John Key researchers in the country at my fingertips on a Skype call, and they were telling me shit that was blowing my effing mind, bro, like, oh my god. you know? Where you sit there and you're kind of, like, in a state of shock, bewilderment, and, I don't know, sort of like a floaty happiness as well at the same time. You get that sensation?
Oh, absolutely. And I loved listening, because I just put the question out there. I didn't say anything and I let them talk. And I could have sat there for hours and hours. You know, each interview took anywhere from just over an hour to 2-3 hours. And they have so much amazing information to share. So I was just sitting there listening, thinking, oh my God, this is such good information to start spreading, you know. And then I put it down into the computer listening, you know. But we're putting it into an audiobook as well, because I find it's easier for people to listen these days than actually read. So it's even more easy access of this information, because it's important that we get this out there.
But you get that kind of sense of urgency, right? And that's what new people do when they wake up. They get that sense of urgency. But the people like me and some of the others that you've interviewed who've actually been doing this for a while, I don't know, at some point you get to realize that you're not going to change everything by yourself, and it's not going to change very quickly. But what you are doing is you're providing an important function so that when it does change, it changes in a positive way and not for the worse, as it almost always has.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's steps, you know. We take steps and we get information out there, and it's little by little, and we can together make a change, as you say. And it's slowly, but it's happening, and it's fantastic.
Well, you know, the contributionism, like volunteerism sort of model of government, I think that you can become that model of government as a person. You know, you can go out and do really nice things for people, and you can help people out, and you can do things that actually benefit the community and the world, etc., without the thought of being paid or being rewarded for it being your motivation for doing it in the first place. That's a really good idea, and I like people who live their life in servitude for others that they actually volunteered themselves into and can quit any time they want.
Absolutely, yeah. Nobody controls you then either. You're free.
Only in a matter of speaking, it's like there's no such thing as freedom. There's only degrees of servitude. Because even people who actually are free, whether they be financially, spiritually, or whatever, they automatically, in order to stay balanced and not become evil, they have to find some kind of balance in their life. They have to find some form of way in which they fit into the overall scheme. Otherwise, they don't understand what they're contributing. They're simply happy, and they're simply there. And that'll happiness and contentment, I think, are... You know how when a mosquito bites into you, it releases an anesthetic so that you don't feel it biting into you? Mm-hmm. That's what happiness is. It's the anesthetic that drains your blood and leaves you itchy and painful after, you know?
Okay.
You know, I have very, very good blood pressure for somebody in my age, right? But that's because I'm always yelling and screaming and laughing just to get the crap out of my system, because that's how I achieve balance, by going to extremes on either side of the spectrum, right? And somehow you end up back in the middle. But I believe that nobody can tell you what your center is. Nobody can tell you where balance comes from, because it is really unique to the individual, just like your contribution to society. I mean, let's say if Milton Friedman and Gandhi had gotten together, and Gandhi tried to say, no, Milton, you can't do stuff your way. You have to do it my way, bro. You have to do it my way, you know? Not only would Milton not have listened, but he probably would have become a lot worse as a person. You know, and that's the kind of thing is there's people who want to control you, and there's people who want to set you free. Right, just make sure you're listening to the right person.
Yeah, absolutely, your choice, isn't it?
No, well, sometimes it's not your choice.
Well, true. If you're stuck in school and you can't get out and stuff, yeah, there's many situations, of course. So it's that's the tricky part, I think. Being selective and
make a good choice when you've got one.
Yeah, correct.
Because otherwise it's kind of like, oh my God, I finally found a use for this. It's called Thomas's Ultimatum. When you when you get given a choice, but there is no other choice, right? Like take it or leave it. You can either you can either have this can of food, or you can have nothing. Okay, now
nice choice.
That's great. I really like the negotiation style of this transaction here, bro. You know, it's just that this the majority of life is the thing that I've been pissed off about for virtually my entire existence ever since I was old enough to think for myself. Is I don't like people telling me what to do. I don't like being forced into anything without being given a choice, you know?
Yeah.
Is that what we've really come down to, I think, as a society, is one that has a group of people who see freedom and independence as a threat to them because they've been in power for so long that they think, maybe they're correct, but I don't think that they are, that if people figured out what they're doing, who they are, that they would lynch them, kill them all, right? That they'd exterminate them, take over their mansions and throw all their stuff out on the street. I don't think people are like that to a large degree. But the reason why people don't wake up to that is because they don't see another person having freedom in their life and independence as a threat. All right? Do you see people who have freedom and independence in their own life that you can't control as a threat?
No, not at all.
Not at all. Now, that's why people like us who believe in such a way that there's no threat in that don't understand instantly and instinctually that we're in danger. Because there are people who do see people who have freedom and independence as a threat to their dominance. And they've hatched their schemes long ago to try and stop that from becoming dangerous to them. That was a theory that I came up with today. And I was like, whoa. That's the main difference between us, eh? I love that you're free to do what you want. I love that you're able to, you know, homeschool your own kid. That's great. They don't like that. They hate that. They think that really sucks. They think you should have a slave job, and they think your children should be in a trauma-based mind control institution called a frickin' school.
Yeah, and it's crazy because in some countries it's not even legal. I mean, if you take your child out of school in Sweden for 1-2 days without permission from the headmaster or mistress, then the government can actually come and take your child. So there's lots of parents, especially Sweden, because I know I communicate with them up there, that wants to homeschool their kids. And, you know, these parents are really dedicated to their children, but they're not allowed to. So they're kind of looking at options, moving to, you know, Denmark or moving to another country for 6 months of the year. That way they can actually live partly somewhere. And it's crazy. You're not allowed to do what you want with your children anymore.
My God. I mean, as if ransom and kidnapping is something you should have to worry about with your kids' education system. Because that's exactly what you just said, isn't it? You know?
Yeah.
It's like they're holding your kids to ransom. You have to have them here. You have to have them here. Otherwise, we're going to take them from you. Oh, hold on. It's ransom or kidnapping? I thought the kidnapping came before the ransom, bro. I mean, you're putting the horse before the cart here.
Yeah. There you go. You haven't got a choice.
See again, it comes down to that. If your choices are being controlled, you're not free. 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 All right? People need to have this. This is a form of mind control that I'm actively engaging in here and telling you that repetition's a form of mind control, ladies and gentlemen. You're not free. 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 Okay? Do you want to be? And how are you going to go about it? How are you going to contribute to the great whole? Right? I consider this sort of like the tactic of the cactus. Nobody can do everything, but everybody can do something. Right?
Right.
And I consider that all me and all the activists and fucking planet are basically just like, I think as Bill Hicks said, little pygmy tribe shooting darts at this big giant beast elephant. You know? you know, trying to bring it down. But I think it's actually closer to growing a spine on the side of a cactus. Just one spine, one person in one area, one conspiracy is their particular cup of tea, and they've committed themselves to exposing it and protecting the innocent, right? But next door in a neighbouring town, there's another conspiracy going on for which another activist has dedicated their life to being a spine there as well. And in so doing, they've covered the earth in cactus spines so that the boot heels of the corrupt, of the unjust, will always be haunted by the spikes that will be driven through their feet if ever they choose to tread on us. The global cactus, the attack cactuses, as it were, that's how we all contribute to one global thing, without being organized, without even knowing each other's name, by just doing what we feel is right and keep doing what we're supposed to be doing. The universe really does show up to support you when you have a greater purpose, when you have a revelation, when it reveals to you what your destiny is and what you must work towards in order to fulfill it. Trust me, stuff gets out of your way, man. But you have to suffer and you have to lose a lot of things that are very valuable in order to do it. Mostly your family and friends. A lot of them you won't really talk to again because they won't understand. But you make new friends and they become your family.
Yeah, I think that's the hardest, you know, losing friends, and you might even lose family. But I find that some people around us, we can socialize and have, you know, socialize and see them without actually talking about things like this. And you can still have a good time. But as soon as something comes up, it feels like, oh, no, we have to change the subject. So it's a kind of different relationship. And it doesn't happen very often anymore because it's you kind of, you choose and your time is valuable and so on. But I don't think you have to lose everybody, because I felt that in the beginning, and I thought, no, I can't. I love them too much. And if they wake up in this body or in this lifetime, great. If they don't, I'm still going to want to have them around, you know.
Well, see, I was kind of like, I didn't burn bridges with anybody, but the only people that I really keep in my life and my social life for those things are the ones who are willing to build a bridge to get to me. You know? If they're willing to, you know, tolerate my, what would you call it, eccentricities of thought, i.e. mm-hmm. actually thinking, you know, if they're willing to tolerate that, have a conversation without it degenerating into abuse or denial or some other of the seven stages of grief, then sure, we can remain friends. Yeah. That's cool. Excellent. Fantastic. Don't even need to have an adjustment period with that one. But unfortunately, those relationships are in the minority. Right? Yeah. That's what panhandling is about, right? Making good friends is similar to putting a pan in the dirt of a river and sifting the filth out of that pan as you run the water over it to reveal the gold beneath. That's why they're so valuable, because you actually have to put a lot of work into a relationship in order to get anything out of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And people just abandon each other, you know. It's like, dude. The world is full of people who are selfish. I should know, I'm one of them. But it doesn't mean that you have to be the way the world is, okay? I think the world should be the way you want it to be. I reckon you should treat people the way you would want to be treated, you know? Regardless of if it's popular.
Yeah, absolutely.
But of course, not being popular is something I've kind of had to deal with.
I think you're pretty popular, Rennie, don't you?
I am in certain circles, but you know, you get me out into other places that are very mainstream. You get me at a national party conference, mate, it might be a little bit different.
Yeah, different story then, isn't it? Yeah,
exactly. Horses for courses, different strokes for different folks. You know, if you if you like being lied to, not having a good time, not laughing, if you don't enjoy puns, if you don't like to take time out from your busy schedule to think about things that are important and have deep, meaningful discussions that take you to different places that you never thought were possible. And talking to and listening to people that embody the greatest dreams of mankind, then you probably won't like me. You know, I can be a bit of a downer like that.
Straightforward.
Oh, God. You know, it's like Abraham Lincoln said, what was it? He was telling a joke after a big battle or something, and a reporter came up to him and he said, "Mr. Lincoln, how can you make jokes at a time like this?" And he says, "Well, if I didn't laugh, I'd cry."
Simple, isn't it?
Yeah. There's two wolves inside of us. One is all fear and rage and anger. And the other is love, acceptance, kindness, and compassion. How big they grow depends on which one you feed the most.
Yeah. Mm. Sorry.
No, it's my show. You go ahead.
No, I'm just saying some days it's I don't know what it is, but if it's in the air, it might be chemtrails or whatever, but... It's certain days it's easier than others, don't you think?
Yeah.
To kind of keep that to, you know, which one do I feed? And that's the voice in the head all the time, you know.
Well, see, my one, I'm going to actually reveal something to you very nasty now. A lot of people will hate me after I say this, so, you know, just be grateful that you're pulling this out. My intentions, my usual initial intentions with people and what I do and everything, are usually actually quite bad. Like, my first instinct is to hurt people, to use them, to make money off them, to benefit myself at others' expense. That's what my instincts tell me to do. However, despite the fact that that's kind of who I am as a person, right underneath it all, over my life, I've learned that you don't do those things to people. Right, and it's not because it's not just because, you know, that you don't do them and it's unblind and questioning. It's because I've realized that it's actually beneficial to myself to ignore who and what I think I am and become something better than what my instincts tell me to be. For I am a man. I can communicate and I can reason unlike the animals can, and it's something that I try to keep at bay a lot of the time, that I feel like I'm a bad person. I want to hurt people, I want to yell at them, I want to abuse them and stuff like that, but it's not my heart that tells me not to do it, it's my mind. All right, and that's the most chilling thing that I've found about myself, and that's half the reason why I've got a lot of friends who expose scumbaggery, because I actually consider myself to be a real threat. Because I'm so selfish like that, and so narcissistic.
But you just said it again. It's like the mind says that. I can totally relate to what you're saying, but that's the mind that we need to take control of. And then you listen to your heart. So that's kind of the longest journey that we travel, from the mind to the heart. And when we know to not be scumbags, we tell the mind to shut up, which is easier as you grow older and you grow into that heart that you have. But it's, thank you for being so honest. That's because I can relate. You know, I think if the mind was controlling me on a daily basis, I wouldn't have a happy life at all. I would be really nasty.
Well, see, I think it's, they talk about human nature, right? As if compassion, love, kindness and self-sacrifice isn't part of human nature as much as hate and cruelty and anger is, you know? I think we all have both of those parts of us kind of working across there. And I think maybe there really is something. I don't believe in religions or anything. I believe that they're there, but I just wonder, is there some point where I'll realize that I'm not as smart as I think I am, and I realize that I'll be lying to myself this entire time, you know, pretending to be the good guy when really I'm just a scumbag underneath that's actually operating for the auspices of some malevolent entity that has me under its control that I'm completely unwitting of, you know? And maybe that's what's telling me to do these horrible things to people. Maybe that's what's telling all of us to do these horrible things to people. Maybe there really was a war in heaven. Maybe there are angels and demons vying for our soul on a daily basis. And we are the ones that have to prevent ourselves from being corrupted, or to decorrupt ourselves, or to simply throw in the towel and become an agent of evil. You know, every day we have those choices. The choice to become evil is something you don't really come back from. It corrupts you permanently. And that's something I learned. And that's the reason why I always choose to keep the evil at bay. Because I know I can always choose to not be good anymore, but I know that as soon as I choose to be evil, there is no coming back from that. And that means I'll never have good friends, I'll never have good family, I'll only have evil friends and evil family. And that just doesn't make me feel comfortable.
Yeah, but I do believe that people are good in general. Don't you? I do believe that.
I don't know.
It's just like cleansing. It's cleansing the mind. It's washing the mind and taking control of it. It's like taking control of your body. It's a lot easier to take control of the body than the mind. But if you start listening and look, you know, just, I don't know how to explain it, but look at your mind. What does it do? And you do that. You do that daily. I do that as well. And I think most people do, you know, and then they do some nasty shit and then they think, oh, maybe I should do that instead, and they grow. But I do think in general that people are good.
Well, I was having a conversation with a musician from a band called 8 Foot Sativa, and we came up with a saying, some people choose good, others choose evil, while some people sit on the fence to see who will come around on top. We're just trying to burn the fence down.
Yeah.
See, that's the thing. A lot of people haven't been forced to make a choice yet. And that's the thing I find about strength and survival and kind of just consciousness in general, is that unless you're constantly tested, you know, unless you're... Basically, you can tell how good somebody is by how evil their enemies are. You know? So if you see somebody being demonized in the mainstream media, being a quack or a kook or some kind of evil person, it's like a lot of these people that I've actually interviewed myself personally after seeing, you know, media hit pieces on them, they're some of the best people on earth, you know? Yeah. It's that great opposition that... Maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's what being good is all about. Suffering. Suffering with not that much benefit for yourself, other than the fact that you continue to not be corrupt and you get to continue to do the right thing. You get to continue to be yourself. You don't become anyone else's. That's the only real benefit I've found in it. Everything else is drawbacks. There's less drugs in the truth movement. There's less sex. There's less entertainment. There's less money. There's less of all of these trappings of success, and entirely new trappings of success begin to form, you know? Like, as we were talking about before, relationships, you know? After, in the last 10 years, I used to value and want cars and houses and money and gold and silver and guns and all of these trinkets, right, that I thought were cool. And I've developed a new belief, is that those things don't actually really have any value beyond the moment that I'm using them. The only thing that retains value beyond what my use is for them, and the only thing that I can never replace, the only thing that actually has its own value that I can't determine and that can be so valuable to me that I don't even know how good it is for me sometimes is people.
Mm.
You know, it always has been, isn't it?
Mm.
They're the only real thing of value. Everything else is superfluous.
I can relate to that. I used to want cars and houses and, oh, we have to have an apartment in Stockholm and we have to have a house. And then now it's like, ooh, no, let's simplify here. You know, it's a lot of work as well. I'm having all these desires and when you get them, it's like you have to take care of them. And no, it's people, relationships. When you stop building that, it's that replaces the car like in a second, doesn't it?
Well, it's just the car can't love you back.
No.
The house doesn't give you a hug when you get back to it, do you?
No.
That's what people have... we live in a world of illusion. And there's something David Icke talked about how archons are capable of projecting illusions. An entire ulterior holographic world that gets put in front of people's eyes to blind them from what's really there.
Yeah.
We've been blinded from what's really valuable. I think Jordan Maxwell was right when he says nothing is what you think it is. Nothing. Right? I started off going, oh, well, surely this mouse pad underneath my hand is what I think it is. And it's like, nothing.
Yeah, that's pretty daunting, isn't it?
Yeah. It's like, oh, no. So, you know, you can look into the molecular structure of the microphone that's in my face right now, and I'd find out some really interesting things about where those particles came from, how they were came into the beings and existence, etc. What kind of shape their atomic structure actually is. Is it a double tetrahedron shape? You know? That kind of stuff. Nothing is as it appears, even on in the micro, the macro, even the 3D, right here in front of you. Now that is a world that can inspire one thing, which I believe is incredibly useful for somebody who wants to learn. The word is wonder. Are you wondering about things? Are you curious about things? That means you're still alive. That means you're still learning. It means you haven't shut off. It means the world hasn't crushed your soul and your spirit and your consciousness yet. And it won't be crushed unless you allow it to be. Having that sense that you don't know everything is the first instinct in the journey of a person who would actually start to know a little bit more. Because it's that curiosity, isn't it?
Absolutely. Growing. When we stop growing, we die.
Is that one of the people's problem is? They've had curiosity turned off. Because this is one of the other things about school as well. Because if you get ostracized for questioning things, it means that what causes people to ask questions in the first place? Curiosity.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if you punish them for asking questions...
Mm.
It suppresses and makes your mind have a negative association with the very concept of curiosity itself. And if you do it enough, people's curiosity can be turned off. What I'm interested in finding out is how to turn that switch back on.
Mm.
That would be cool, wouldn't it? Actually make people curious about something like, what? Because once you get that little splinter in your mind, it's back. It's so monstrous. I can't understand it. It's like I need to research. I need to research. You know, like somebody who never even picked up a book in their life suddenly has that come into their head. That kind of thing. Man, that'd be cool. Weaponize a serum for that shit, you know, sprayed out of the planes and the chemtrails, and all of a sudden you've got people running around going crazy. Oh, my God, the new world order is fucking us all. You know. In an ideal world. I could be wrong. Maybe. I don't have the money to put that research into the thing, you know. So if there's any government agents listening right now, just pass it on to your superiors, you know. Maybe they'll be on side and they go, hey, bro, chemtrailing everybody with an anti-mind control drug sounds like a really good idea. Yeah, man. It'll topple this whole system that we're working under, the people that are actually keeping us under their boot heels. Well, why would we want to do that? We've got safe employment and stuff like that. We're surveilling people. We're acting like scumbags. We're immune. We're gods, mate. And they go, nah, bro. Every time that a dictatorship really takes over, guess who the first people to get killed are? Get rounded up and executed. It's all the people that helped the takeover and the coup in the first place. You know why? All of Hitler's like top staff and stuff like that in his campaigns and everything just wound up dead. All the great guards and everything like that before he became the Chancellor wound up dead. It's because only they knew the truth of how the bad guys even get into power in the first place. And the truth is such a dangerous concoction that it cannot be allowed to live. And the best way to kill the truth is to kill the man who knows it. Okay, so if you're sitting there in your little NSA office or FBI little cubicle or whatever listening into this broadcast, your days are numbered, mate. I would suggest finding some other employment, you know? Preferably one that doesn't hasten your own orderly extermination, you know? Got that self-preservation instinct, bro? Mm-hmm. Is it working for you? Apparently not! Because you're still listening, and you haven't quit your job yet. Cognitive dissonance, man. Ain't that a bitch? I've been getting some really good rants today, you know? At first, I felt really, really sorry that I was talking over you, but then I realised it's 4 o'clock in the morning, and you could actually use a hand.
Brilliant, thank you, really. Yeah.
I mean, damn, I'm good, you know? I'm a seasoned radio show host up in here, right? Because it's been fun, hasn't it? And we still have a number of minutes left in the broadcast. So I would like to, if it's okay with you, run through those questions, just what those questions are that you had for those people.
Okay, sure. So I start asking, when did you start exploring your field? Was there a specific event that led you to this path of waking up?
A flatmate introduced me to weed and conspiracy theories. Move on.
Great. Yeah, please. You can answer all these as well. Fantastic. How do you see the world today in the terms of the challenges facing us?
Everything's getting worse and better at the same time.
Does it matter if we vote or not?
Does it matter if what?
If we vote or not?
Yeah. For the entertainment value, absolutely. Because if you vote for somebody who's a real troublemaker, who, for example, Winston Peters in New Zealand, who called one of the National Party members an illiterate woodshop teacher in the House, that shit's fucking funny. That's worth a vote.
What are your thoughts about money and the global banks?
It's controlled by a bunch of ruthless criminals, sociopathic scumbaggery, who have no allegiance to any flag or any people, or any common humanity or decency, and they kind of control the money supply of most of all the powerful financial, military, and ecclesiastical power in the world. So they kind of got it stitched up by having a magical sleight-of-hand thing called the creation of the money supply, which they control.
What do you think about the debt-based economy people are stuck in, and is there a way out?
Yeah, there is. I don't like it because it's debt is essentially prison, just like mortgage means death grip, you know? We don't need mortgage, we need less gidge, all right? That's what I'm talking about, bro. I think we want one thing. It's a word called jubilee. Every 50 years, all debts, get cleared, right? I think that's actually a good way to balance the economy, and it's very natural, and it fits in with the cycle.
We have started to read and hear about microchipping people. What does that mean?
That means everybody who lives in the future will have something that can track them and let them in or not let them in to places that they want to go. That will let them buy or not let them buy things that they want to buy. Essentially, it'll be complete and total control for all human life until the end of time.
What are your thoughts about depopulation?
Well, I don't like the author Deepak Chopra any. I think he's a dick. Is his name Deepak Chopra? Maybe. Okay. Anyway, depopulation is very pervasive, and I don't think it's terribly good for people to be overtly and covertly controlled, whether or not they can raise their kids or even have kids in the first place. Our sperm rates are dropping, and essentially the planet's facing extinction, and that's what birth control has really done to humanity at the moment.
What is your opinion on vaccines, and is vaccination part of the depopulation question?
Yeah, pretty much. It's just like most other things that come out of mainstream medicine. It's an engineered bioweapon disguised as a medicine.
What are GMOs?
Genetically modified organisms, normal organisms that can be processed by the body and converted into average chemicals and things like that, that have been changed somewhat so that the body can no longer manifest and get all the proper nutrients out of it, and instead it converts them into cancer.
Do chemtrails exist, and if so, how would you describe them?
Yes, they do exist, and they're a weather control weapon, essentially, that I can guarantee that people are taking bets on rain and sun and food derivatives based on chemtrailing activities, and chemtrailing happens mostly in NATO countries, so that's a big indicator.
Right. Please share your thoughts about the environment and the current weather conditions.
It's fucked. Next question.
Do you have a practice that keeps your spirit high?
I have a practice that keeps me high. It's called being a stoner, and telling lots of really lame jokes all the time. I think really helps with the horrible reality of scumbaggery that I'm trying to escape from constantly.
Seeing the madness around me, I feel hopeless. Can you suggest some ways that would help me regain my trust in the future and how to act to make a positive change?
Is this the final question?
No.
No? Don't take yourself too seriously, and don't take what other people have to say about you too personally.
And now we've got the final question. If you could plant one seed in the mainstream mind, what would that be?
I'm a fuckwit.
All right, 14 questions.
See, there you go. That's probably the quickest interview you've ever done.
I was sitting there thinking, oh, maybe I should ask you to be in the next book.
Yeah, you know, well, that's just when I'm under a quick fire round under pressure, you know. I can probably yeah, elaborate, yeah. But yeah, I'd love to be in your next book.
Sure.
Thank you very much for the offer. Just put you on the spot. It's really terrible when people do that, you know, like they ask you on air, oh, is you getting me on your radio show?
Yeah.
It's like, because you put them on the spot because there's an audience watching, you're like, you know, it's like, yeah. Bro, that's the kind of stuff you put in a private email, okay?
Yeah.
And don't BCC that shit to nobody else. Oh, mate. But yeah, it's been a great day, great interview. I feel fantastic, and only half as hot and sweaty as I normally do at this point in the show because of the New Zealand humidity and weather control systems, lovingly provided by Monsanto's chemtrail service, coming near you today. Now, have you got a website for your book there?
Yeah, you can get the book on Amazon, So What Can I Do, it's called. And you can go to awakeandunite.com or email me to info@awakeandunite.com with questions for Volume 2 or people that you would like to interview.
All right, what can you do about it, ladies and gentlemen? It's not a rhetorical question. It's one you're supposed to actually search for the answer for. How can I personally contribute? That's a good one. All right. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. And thank you, Kim Ekman, for joining me today as well. Donate at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Otherwise, we might all get exterminated because people aren't having enough laughs. All right. Thank you very much. And we'll see you again sometime.